Hello, friends. On today's show, a major builder has started fighting fires. We have a new Kung Fu master. Ethiopia has found a better cup of coffee. And the kids in Europe are joining offline clubs. Well, I mean, right after they listen to this. That's coming up. Jessica, please give us the intro.
We all need that one friend, don't we? The one that, no matter how crazy things get around us, always has some good news to share. Hey, what if you had two friends like that? That's twice the good times. On the rocks, not for long, because everything sounds better when you're two beers in. Now, here are your hosts, Brett Weaver and Monica Ballard.
Today, I went to the credit union because I'm short enough on cash to where it was time to cash in the coins, throw the coins in the coin counter and go do that. So I go,
one,
I guess,
two,
yes,
three,
60,000. One, two, and so they pointed out the machine to me. So I walk over to the machine, getting ready to count them coins. And it says upgrade or something needed, like we need repair needed. So like, huh. So I walk back out to the lobby to where the fellow that was at the door. And I was like, it says that it needs some kind of maintenance or something. He goes, I'll take care of it. Just have a seat right here. It's like, thank you. So he walks over and does a thing, about 3 minutes, walks back, and he says, it's all ready to go. I go, did you reboot it? He goes, exactly. That's exactly what happened. Thank you, sir. So I get up and I walk over there just as three young ladies walk up to it, and they start putting their cash in.
One.
So,
two,
yes.
Three.
It's at 60,000.
You can put it all
in at once. One. And so I laugh, and I come back around, and he looks at me like, what's going on? I'm like, somebody just walked. He goes, nobody's been here until.
I'm like, okay, fine, I'll sit here.
I'll do my doom scrolling. So I do my doom scrolling for just, you know, a couple of minutes, you know, maybe 5 minutes, because I'm going, because I'm not
There's only so much doom you can take.
I'm not seeing anybody come out. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to go check. So then I go to check, and there's another person there. A totally different person. And I was just like, and he's looking at me like, did someone else? Yes, someone else is there. And
you're a wizard.
And
you summon them.
And I go, so this time I stand to where I've got my eye line right on the. And he goes, sir, have a cup. I go, I only came here for a cup of coffee. I'm actually not here for the change.
For the change.
And he goes, I will keep an eye on it. I'm like, bro. It is not your responsibility me to get in line for the change thing. So he's like, okay. And so then I went, and finally I got my change done, a whole $50.
Thank you very much.
And I come back, and we both did high fives, victory signs, and I immediately went and had some bad Chinese food. So
it takes so little to be pleased in this life.
Very much. Very much. And with that opening story, you're listening to Two Beers In, a podcast where we tell positive stories like getting your change done and enjoying alcohol.
Yeah.
I am one of your hosts, Brett Weaver. We are here. I've already enjoyed a shot of Telemore Dew.
Okay.
And I am having a Live Oak Hefeweizen.
Telemore Dew. He fought Doctor Strange, right?
Yes, he did. We are here in Pflugerville at the Whiskey Room, hence the Telemore Dew, off of, well, here, let me look up the information. We are here, that's the wrong thing, here on 113 East Pecan Street in Pflugerville, Texas. It's a wonderful location. Doug, let me ask you something. We're going to get there. We're going to get there, Monica.
Okay.
Doug, do they have pinball machines?
They do have pinball machines.
Doug, do they have dartboards?
They do have dartboards.
Doug, do they have crippling gaming machines, that's probably going to be bad for all of us.
They have plenty of addicted people in front of those machines.
Thank you, Doug. We just wanted to put that out here before I introduce my co-host, Monica Ballard.
Hello. Yes, I am the co-host of the show.
Trying something different.
Yeah. So you took as bad a turn there as I did coming down this street where they've got a lane on the left going towards you and a lane on the right going towards you.
Yep.
And you're supposed to know
the middle.
To take the middle lane.
Yep.
Like, who was drunk enough? What city planner was drunk enough to plan that out?
I played GTA 5. I think I can design a city.
Or you can just be a jerk and say, I know I'm in the right lane, and I know I'm supposed to turn right, but I'm going straight. Screw you. So here's Monica. Monica, instead of getting a rum and pineapple, what did you get instead?
I have a draft Dos Equis because I'm just plain out of ideas.
How is that Dos Equis, Monica?
It is predictable.
Is it flat?
I ended up with two guys at my table, so...
There you go. You're doing all right.
I'm doing all right. I'm like the most interesting man in the world.
That's right. Stay frosty, my friends.
That's it.
And the reason he asked whether it was flat was I had a Dos Equis for my first beer in, and it was flat.
Yes.
So I've switched to an electric jellyfish.
Yeah, that's Doug over there, by the way, if you didn't know.
I'm Doug.
We've got four stories and a fun song to share with you. And we will get started on that now. Monica, do you want the first story or would you like the second story?
I'll take the first story.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Make me feel useful. California developer builds first neighborhood where all the homes are resistant to wildfires.
Good, finally.
Wildfires.
They're in the ocean.
There's a twist to this story that when you get to it, I will point it out.
Okay. In response to the escalating threat of wildfires, one of the nation's largest home builders, KB Home.
There it is.
Yeah. Has developed Dixon Trail, a community of 64 wildfire-resistant homes in Escondido, California.
Dixon Trail.
This innovative development aims to significantly reduce the risk of loss for homeowners in areas prone to devastating fires. Oh, like the recent Palisades or Dixie fires.
Mm.
Prices for these homes are estimated at around $1 million. Consistent with other disaster-proof housing options nationwide.
Okay.
The design of Dixon Trail homes prioritizes mitigating the most common causes of residential fires.
Mm-hmm.
While not entirely fireproof, the exteriors and roofs feature non-flammable materials, and landscaping incorporates curated desert foliage to minimize combustible elements. So your bushes don't blow up.
Well, another thing that they've taken into consideration is, and this is something that has been studied for a long time, is one of the big problems of there being fire is there's kindling next to the house.
Yeah.
Everybody grows bushes and trees and stuff and put them right up next to the house, which looks really cool, but we forget, that's kindling.
Did they build them on top of the other fire-resistant houses that weren't fireproof?
Yes.
Sure. These community-level mitigation efforts are crucial in preventing wildfires from becoming catastrophic events.
Mm-hmm.
Dixon Trail is designed to receive a provisional neighborhood-level designation from IBHS.
Yes.
IBHS must have been discussed earlier. Oh, yeah. The Institute for Business and Home Safety.
Both of us. It's funny. We're both looking at him like, oh no.
What is IBS? Yes,
I have IBS.
IBH. Intestinal Bell High School.
I don't know. Right. I'm not digesting this very well. Let's keep
home
going.
Home of the flaming diarrheas.
Go diarrhea.
Run. Please stop running.
Despite being situated in a high-risk wind corridor susceptible to windblown embers, Dixon Trail stands as a model of wildfire resiliency, integrating research-backed mitigation actions into every aspect of its design.
Yay.
With fire becoming an increasingly common threat in the West, it's crucial to reconsider how we construct communities in fire-prone zones, stated IBHS CEO Roy White, highlighting KB Home's leadership in adopting research-driven wildfire mitigation strategies at both the individual home and neighborhood levels. Mm-hmm. This proactive approach by builders by KB Homes offers a vital solution for home buyers facing rising insurance premiums and declining policy availability in high-risk areas. This story brought to you by KB Homes.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that usually I am not a fan of KB Homes.
Right. KB Homes is usually like the cheap option.
Exactly.
In the home builders.
And that was, I was like, you know what? They are going to be around no matter what we say or do.
This is true.
So we might as well point out a thing that they did right. Hopefully.
Finding a way to get people to pay $1 million for a KB home?
Yes.
In California?
In but $1 million in California.
Well, in California, that's a bungalow.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. That was your twist?
That was the twist.
That was
the twist. Well, no, the twist was when you said KB Homes. Like, those who know me know how much I hate KB Homes.
Matter of fact, I was in the bar last night with a guy who had moved from California to Houston because he was tired of the high prices and he wanted to save money. He got a much bigger house in Houston. So,
We
had just talked about housing prices in California.
Did he get a house by Bear Creek Park?
He got it out in Kirkwood? Kirkwood.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's on the other side of the levee. Because there's, everybody goes, oh, that area, it's beautiful. It's also in a floodplain. So.
Right. Well, it's Houston. So there you go.
Yep.
I wonder if these homes are made out of Rostra.
That's very interesting. Why would you say that, Monica?
I know too much about Rostra.
Yes.
Who is Rostra?
Well, that is, the Jamaican culture really really celebrated Rostra.
Yes, the Rostra. all of the buildings at Wizard Academy are made out of Rostra.
Okay. So that they're
for good and bad.
And Roy's whole, one of the things that he always bragged about was fire won't burn it, insects won't eat it, and these buildings will stand here 500 years long after we're gone. And people will wonder, what the hell went on here?
Yeah.
Kind of like they do today.
And then they'll find the thing that says, totally not a cult.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, it was clearly a cult.
Yeah. I love this next story. And yes, that I realize that now I have to be the one that does the pronunciation. So here we go.
I did not purposefully do that.
Yep.
But I will add that I read that first story cold.
Because you're awesome.
Because that's what I do.
Yep. West African man becomes kung fu master, brings Chinese martial arts and the meditation back home. I love it. Master Degbo, a Chinese Shaolin kung fu and tai chi teacher, has cultivated the largest Chinese martial arts club in the West African nation of Benin. Originally named Damien Ogasu Degbo.
Of course.
Sure. His journey began at age 13 because he watched Jackie Chan films screened at Porto Novo. The grace, strength, and discipline of kung fu figures inspired him to join a local martial arts club, training four times a week and setting the stage for an extraordinary cultural phenomenon. And of course, I think of that going, I want to reach out to him and go, I was in Street Fighter 2. I was Ryu in Street. And then he'd be like, I don't know. Why are you here? So Degbo's dedication earned him a life-changing scholarship at the Shaolin Temple in the slopes of Wuding Mountain in China.
Wuding!
Wuding!
I love that first album.
Yes. For life. There, training was relentless and transformative, far exceeding the pace he knew back home. As he told China's Global Times in Shaolin, Kung Fu was a way of life. Beyond physical combat, he delved into Chinese calligraphy, tea preparation, meditation, and massage techniques. Dude's a player.
Jeez.
punch, punch, punch.
My man.
Need.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I hurt you? Oh, that's better.
Oh, that's better.
Yeah.
Back to the punching.
Happy ending. A profound cultural shock for a French-speaking teenager from West Africa's vibrant musical communities. What does it have to do about music? Anyway. A year later.
Punch in rhythm.
Yes. A year later, Degbo returned to China for further cultural immersion, mastering traditional dragon and lion dances, which he then brought back to his Super Shaolin Club of Benin, now in a town under 20 miles north of Cotonou. 350 boys and girls energetically practice kung fu, ending their sessions with Buddhist meditation. Degbo's motivation is clear. I want to pass on what I've learned to empower young people with self-discipline, confidence, and an understanding of other cultures. Sharing kung fu with young people gives them insight into the value of Chinese culture, discipline, harmony, respect, Degbo reflected, emphasizing how it opens a window onto other worldviews. This narrative of martial arts fosters positive change and echoed elsewhere, such as in Kenya, where the Savora Fencing Club, founded by former gangster Maburo Wanyoke, uses fencing to help disadvantaged Nairobi kids in school and off the streets. They're just going around with swords. They're rocking swords, demonstrating that the universal power of discipline and dedication.
And nunchucks.
And it is true. It is true that, you know, when you learn more things about martial arts, you seem to be less likely to fight. Because you go, oh, I know what the discipline that's involved in this. And I know the harm that I can cause. Therefore, I don't need to worry about that person bad-mouthing me or doing whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, my second sensei always said, never fight a person that you don't know their combat background.
Right.
You might find out that they have one.
Yes, that's right.
So the Haha are kind of interesting. The Haha of Kenya actually fought the British pretty hard. They were one of the most fierce East African tribes against them, which always made me wonder, how was it if you died and you had to tell your family, I got killed by the Haha. Why are you laughing
at
me? No, I got killed by the Haha.
It's sad. It's sad.
It's sad.
Stop saying that.
But yes, fierce East African tribe.
Shall we stay in Africa, Monica?
Absolutely.
There we go.
Ethiopians brew success as coffee and cash pile up thanks to transformational sustainable forestry program. Coffee, beyond its societal benefits, offers significant environmental advantages, particularly as a monocrop and capable of thriving within natural ecosystems. In Ethiopia, where coffee is a vital export, a recent project demonstrated remarkable success by integrating climate-compatible and conservation strategies among growers. This initiative resulted in over 5,000 acres of reforested land, a 45% increase in household income for participants, and a substantial 70% boost in exported coffee, highlighting coffee's potential as a driver for sustainable development.
Yeah, and so they tried to make it as, like, not just sustainable for growing, but for the whole process that it's working through.
All right, where in Ethiopia was this?
How dare you?
Stand by. The Arabor Zone.
Okay, so Ababor. Southeast?
Ababor Zone.
Oromia.
Oromia.
Yeah, that's southeast.
I guess it's Oromia has to do with the aroma of the coffee.
Maybe.
No,
I mean, we don't know.
It's just
Yeah.
Maybe they're stinky. Could they be stinky tribe?
If I remember correctly, they're the tribe that the Somalians invaded Ethiopia trying to take over.
Oops.
And did not work out very well for the Somalians.
Because they're all hopped up on coffee.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because coffee came from Ethiopia.
Yeah, it's from Ethiopia.
Yep.
So, working with 19 local forest management cooperatives, Oh, excuse me. I drank my Dos Equis a little fast.
Comprising
approximately 4,000 people, mm-hmm. the core objective was to equip landholders with sustainable practices to meet their needs without excessive deforestation. This involved training in cultivating fast-growing trees for firewood and maximizing their growth cycles, along with establishing 6 tree nurseries that trained and employed 60 individuals to sell seedlings for reforestation efforts. By the project's conclusion, over 300,000 seedlings had been planted across 5,000 acres, boasting an impressive 85% five-year survival rate.
Wow, that is very impressive.
I'm actually very impressed that Ethiopia hasn't already wiped out all of the nutrients in the soil after 3,000 years.
Right.
They've done a good job.
Beyond reforestation, the project fostered widespread adoption of climate-smart farming techniques. For instance, cultivating bamboo for coffee drying mats eliminated the need for external sourcing, while 66% of homes transitioned to energy-efficient wood stoves, significantly reducing fuel consumption. The initiative also boosted food security and income diversification. The percentage of Ethiopians adopting climate-smart farming for vegetable and fruit production increased from 49% to 76%, with a 10% rise in those growing additional fruits and vegetables. This led to a remarkable, are you sitting down?
Ready.
280% increase in income from these activities,
nice.
Adjusted for inflation, demonstrating the comprehensive economic benefits of sustainable practices. So it's called Coffee for Conservation. And the project profoundly improved coffee production, marketing, and financial returns.
I'm also curious of how the taste is.
Most of the Ethiopian ones are really dark roasts.
Yeah.
So, wow.
All right.
Okay.
They really enjoy this story.
Yeah. As Abde Musa, a cooperative member, articulated, growers... Now we've taken control and are the ones negotiating and determining the coffee prices, underscoring the project's success in empowering local communities.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, that is very, very positive.
Good. Maybe they can bring coffee prices down against the tariffs.
Yep. We just got it.
They're only being charged 30%. Plus 1,000% plus
that's right.
Negative.
Just a little more than the penguins.
Less than 850%. And then also, but maybe not. But, you know, let's just hold on for 30 days. Let's just hold on.
Yeah.
You know,
it might not
it's
happen.
All good, but it might not. It'll be great, but maybe not. You don't know what I'm going to do, do you? You don't know what I'm going to do.
Let's keep in mind.
I hold all the cards because I don't even know what I'm going to do.
Yep.
Keep in mind, he doesn't even drink coffee.
Yep. What are we talking about?
What? No, not politics.
What?
Not
no.
us.
Come on.
Young adults joining offline clubs across Europe to replace screen time with real time.
Nah, won't last.
I think they're going to be just going nuts on Foursquare. They're going to be playing Foursquare all the time. Because, I mean, if we got pickleball, there's going to be Foursquare. All right, let me read the thing.
Honestly, I mean, I could see how they could use the same things.
Yeah.
I could really see that.
Not everyone pines for the days without cell phones, but what about social media? Would you erase social media from the history books if you could? Yes. Also, yes. If you said yes, you share the feelings of a staggering 46% of teenage respondents to a recent survey from the British Standards Institute, or BSI.
BMI?
initiative, which also found that 68% of the respondents say they felt worse when they spend too much time on their socials, despite often being seen as the most vulnerable generation to smartphone addiction. I disagree. I feel like my generation is the most.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't stop. And social media use, it appears teens who in any generation are extremely quick to pick up emerging social trends are picking up on the negative impact social media has on had on their lives and are enthusiastically looking to cut back. Enter the Offline Club, who ironically has 530,000 followers on Instagram.
What?
A Dutch
Wait
social.
Wait a second.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep reading.
I got a question.
I'm going to just keep reading. A Dutch social movement looking to create screen-free public spaces and events in cafes to revive the time before phones, when board games, social interaction, and reading were the activities observed in public. They also host digital detox retreats, where participants unplug not only from their smartphones, but from computers too, and experience a life before the internet. In a time when social media and mass internet-enabled communication through text and video have allowed psychology and medical professionals to gain celebrity levels of influence, wow, that's a lot, many of those same professionals, be it Jonathan Haidt or Phil McGraw.
Dr.
Phil McGraw. All right, now you're going to be sounding the alarm over the harm, which the introduction of handheld internet access has been mental well-being of the youngest generation, right? Right?
Right.
But you didn't, did you?
No.
All right. The research shows that out of 1,290 individuals aged 16 to 21, 47% would prefer to be young in a world without the internet, with 50% also saying a social media curfew would improve their lives.
They're sitting on their phones looking for retirement homes for their parents who are in their 30s.
Yes, absolutely.
I ran across an article in Bored Panda yesterday.
Fantastic.
About 30 things you wish were still around before the internet, or things that you miss during the before times.
Lawn darts.
No. No, I mean having to do with smartphones.
Gotcha.
And the internet and that sort of thing. And I remember passing by the window of an antique store one time, and my stepdaughter Diana pointed into the window and said, "That looks like a school desk, but it's weird. Why is it weird?" And I said, "What's a telephone table?"
Oh, okay.
And she said, "A what?" And I said, "It's a telephone table. So you would have a table, and the little thing there underneath, that's where you put the telephone book." And she said, "What's it?
The what?
What's it?" And I said, "It's an amazing book that came to your door, and it had everybody's names and addresses and telephone numbers."
That's right.
And then you would turn to another portion of it where the pages were yellow. And she said, "The yellow pages?" And I said,
"There you go."
Yes. And that's where you look for businesses. And it was all categorized according to the business that you wanted. So if you needed an exterminator, you went to E for exterminators. Yep. And she was like, "So you would just sit there and call people on the phone?" I said, "Yes, because the phone was wired to the wall."
Yep.
"And you couldn't carry it around with you. And if you were really lucky, it had a really, really long, curly cord on it."
So good move.
"And if you weren't so lucky, there were two other phones in the house that your parents would pick up while you're trying to talk to your friend on the phone, usually a girl, and you would say, 'Get out the phone!'"
And something else that was mentioned in that article was having to talk to someone else's parents before they actually put your friend on.
Yes.
It's kind of like, "Hello, Mrs. Craddock. is Clara there? Can I speak with Clara? I'm fine. Yep. Yes.
My grades are good."
And so after she heard all of this, she threw herself across her fainting couch.
Yes.
Exactly. That's right.
You know what you can throw yourself across from?
That's right. And you won't have to faint.
And you will not have to faint.
No.
Pinball machine.
Just go to patreon.com/2beersin where you can subscribe. Get an extra episode a week on your feed from us to you with more information that you can maybe sometimes use.
Bring it.
We thank those of you that do that. You can also, if you just want to throw some money our way, you can go to PayPal. Oh, footsie with Doug.
Hey, you two.
Just happened. PayPal or Venmo. Going to twobeersin@weightlesspod.com, where you can also send us email, too, and we appreciate all your messages.
Yes, all of them.
All of them. So Monica sent me a song to play.
Yes.
From a group called the Barefoot Movement.
Nice.
Co-founders and married couple Noah Wall and Tommy Norris found themselves facing a decision in regard to the band to call it quits or bring it through a renaissance and find a new way forward. This is why I'm reading this. Tommy and I started this band with a vision to be the Fleetwood Mac of bluegrass.
Oh, Lord.
In the sense that it would be a true four-piece band with multiple lead singers. Never about the other stuff.
No.
The other.
Not the I want to kill you part.
Yeah, yes. And I've cheated on you with another band member.
And we're going to sing about it in concert in front of millions of people night after night after night.
You can go your own way.
I was reading that up, and I was just like, that is so funny. So they're going to be doing a cover here in a minute before I push the button, or after I push the button.
Yeah, what brought this to mind was that I read about how they're going to stop making the penny. This sort of ties into your whole coin story.
Yes. It all fits. We totally planned that.
They
saw Brett waiting, and they were like, fuck the penny.
Yeah.
It costs more to make pennies now than it actually costs more to make nickels too.
Nickels,
but
yeah,
they're not eliminating the nickel right now. So they're doing away with the penny. Yep. So I thought, well, Penny Lane might be a good song to play, but not the Penny Lane that we all are familiar with.
That's right.
So let's see if we can find a good cover. I found a lot of covers.
You found a lot of covers. I was thinking of doing an alt of what's his name? Elvis Costello has a version of it.
I think this
one is better.
I enjoy this one. It's not too far afield,
nope,
and yet just interesting enough. So please enjoy the Barefoot Movement's rendition of Penny Lane,
but before we push the button.
Yes.
You know what? You go ahead and introduce yourself this time.
Okay. All right. I'm your co-host, Monica Ballard, still enjoying a frosty Dos Equis with a lime.
Yes. And I am also one of the hosts, and I'm enjoying or just finished a Live Oak Hefeweizen. And there's Doug over there.
And I have a jellyfish inside of me.
Yes, you do.
Ooh.
Yes, you do.
Ooh, it's all tickly.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
In Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know. And all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car. The little children laugh at him behind his back. Yeah. shelter in the middle of a roundabout. The pretty nurse is selling poppies from a tray. And though she feels as if she's in a play, she is anyway. In Penny Lane, the barber shaves another customer. We see the banker sitting waiting for a trim. Suburban skies.